Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Bhakti Vedanta ki jai, Rantaraj Śrīmad Bhagavatam ki jai, Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Gopremānande.
So what you were discussing last night's class. That's nice. What else is there?
Bhakti is so powerful that it can even overcome the curse of a brahmana or even a sin of that of killing of a cow.
Any other points?
We saw the qualities more important than the birth in which a person is born. For becoming a kshatriya can become a brahmana or vice versa. For a vaishya to become a brahmana. It's the quality that matters, which again Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvedi Maya Sutta was emphasized.
Good. Anything else?
We also discussed how Prasada became a great saint and then went back to Godhead.
Good. Any other points?
The point of the service is Prasada. You also mentioned that we have to tolerate because material world is meant to give us difficulties. But despite all these setbacks which might come in our life, we need to continue Krishna consciousness. In that context, he gave us the example of Ajita Puri, that how he lost his toe but still, you know, he continued his service. He did not mention Jonya on the Radhika. He drew the Radhika to Nirvana and the Radhika.
Did you listen to the lecture or your husband told you? He told you. Any other points?
In Kali, everybody almost is Shudra, but by eating the prasad only that you can become perfect and chanting.
Nice. Anything
and
else?
And the Kshatriyas are interested in more in drinking and the Brahmanas are
interested
in getting contributions.
Anything else?
A pure devotee of Lord who is engaged in devotional service is exempt from the law of karma.
Good point.
I was about to say on the same point, like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purport which you made yesterday, talking about more of a karma. Which is common for a devotee or non-devotee, but for a devotee Krishna will use it to bring it closer to him. And he was also talking about sannyasis. Sannyasi is again part of the varnashram boundary, which is material. So only a pure devotee will be considered above the material modes, can become situated in the material modes.
Good. Any other points?
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu favored all the Sastra Bhakti. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam was the top, and the great Bhagavatam is the synopsis of Srimad Bhagavatam. And only Bhakti attracts Krishna.
Very good.
Miseries are bound to happen in the world. Even sometimes pure devotees come across miseries, but pure devotees are not affected by them, and they always and stay in the material.
Anything else? Okay. So tonight we'll begin chapter 3. What is chapter 3 called? What was that?
Matters of
Sukanya.
Okay, so we're going to hear further about the dynasty of Manu, about his descendants. And even there's mention at the very end of this chapter about Revati, And Revati becomes the wife of Balaram, Lord Balaram. So we're getting closer to the 10th canto, where we hear about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram in the Surya Vamsa. So this is the description which is now leading us towards the 10th canto. The Nanus, the descendants, how the universe is populated, leading into the appearance of Lord Ram, which will come very soon, and then the appearance of Lord Krishna, which will also be discussed very soon. So as I said last night, I won't be giving classes next week. I'll have a week off, and then we'll continue the following week. But Bhanu Swami will give class next Tuesday night. He's going to speak on the 9th canto, I think. Like that. He said he might speak on one pastime from the 9th canto, so try to come.
You don't want me there? Next Tuesday you won't be there?
Next week I won't be here. Yeah. But the following week we'll start again. But Bhanu Swami, we sent him a message, and I asked him to do like an overview of the whole 9th canto, but I think he'll just do one section. But either way. Okay. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued. O King, Shayati, another son of Manu, was a ruler completely aware of Vedic knowledge. He gave instructions about the functions for the second day of the Jagya to be performed by the descendant of Angira. Shayati had a beautiful lotus-eyed daughter named Sukanya, with whom he went to the forest to see the ashram of Chavana Muni. While that Sukanya, surrounded by her friends, was collecting various types of fruits from the trees in the forest, she saw within the hole of an earthworm two things glowing like luminaries. As if induced by providence, the girl ignorantly pierced those two glowworms with a thorn. And when they were pierced, blood began to ooze out of them. Thereupon, all the soldiers of Shayati were immediately obstructed from passing urine and stool. Upon perceiving this, Shayati spoke to his associates in surprise. How strange is it that one of us has attempted to do something wrong to Chavana Muni, the son of Bhrigu? It certainly appears that someone among us has polluted this ashram. Being very much afraid, the girl, Sukanya, said to her father, "I have done something wrong, for I have ignorantly pierced these two luminous substances with a thorn." After hearing this statement by his daughter, King Shayati was very much afraid. In various ways, he tried to appease Chavana Muni, for it was he who sat within the hole of the earth womb. King Shayati, being very contemplative and thus understanding Chavana Muni's purpose, gave his daughter in charity to the sage. Thus released from danger with great difficulty, he took permission from Chavana Muni and returned home.
The king, after hearing the statement of his daughter, certainly told the great sage Chavana Muni everything about how his daughter had ignorantly committed such an offense. The Muni, however, inquired from the king whether the daughter was married. In this way, the king, understanding the purpose of the great sage Chavana Muni, tat abhiprayam ajnani, immediately gave the Muni his daughter in charity and escaped the danger of being cursed. Thus, with the permission of the great sage, the king returned home.
So, are there any points of interest here?
My name is very careful with sages. We can't offend them.
This is the girl I want to speak of.
Or is that Muhammad Rule?
Because they are afraid of the curse they can give. What do you mind?
Have you ever met a sage? Actually, you have. Your spiritual master is a rishi, a muni, a sage.
Am I a rishi?
Your guru master. all of the sannyasis, if they are sages, the gurus.
He is so good, and I don't think he has cursed him.
Hopefully not. Maybe he did. Okay.
Oh, I was just thinking, in the practical terms, if this is the case for a saint, then what to speak of a devotee? So, it will be more powerful in terms of the offenses, just by thinking thoughts or words.
Any other points?
Yeah, once again seeing in the Bhagavatam, the Panditji chapter, how someone committed another unknowingly, and they have to pay for that offense which they committed unknowingly. In the previous chapter, we saw Prashada, who killed the cow unknowingly, and he had to, like he had to accept the curse. And here also we are seeing that the girl has to marry a clone who is because unknowingly.
Good point.
Who was it?
You can repeat something. Don't do the whole thing.
Unknowingly, we are seeing immediately in the previous chapter and this chapter how unknowingly also if you commit offense, they have to accept some prayership, some curse or something for that. It was an offense. In both cases, it was unknowingly.
Thank you.
Previous chapter, it was Prashada, no?
Okay. Anything else?
Vedic system also is coming across here to me that the father has the authority to give the daughter in marriage. You know, even though he was old and the daughter could have objected, but still, you know, the Vedic system is that the daughter needs to listen to the father. For example, in the modern East, it is not possible that no daughter will agree to marry an old man just because the father is afraid of the curse or something like that. So
you're saying the children don't listen to the parents these days? Is this your experience? Or really?
The experience of all the parents.
Huh? Huh?
All
the
parents.
Is it? Huh? Brenda, you don't listen to your mother? Do you listen to your mother? Sometimes. She's a Brahmani, at least we've established you're honest. That's a good quality. It's also very good if you listen to your parents. Tike? Acha. Bhagavatam says. Very good. Please listen. Honest. Okay.
Also, Daksha offended Lord Shiva, and he got a goat's head.
Yeah.
I think the girl was very lucky. It happened with the providence. So maybe he was so powerful, he became so nice and handsome later on. So she must be very, very lucky.
Also we can see how wise king was, how knowledgeable, because he saw his people were suffering, and if he didn't give his daughter as charity, the sage would cause the whole kingdom to be destroyed. So better he was so much detached from his family and was just serving his country with pure heart.
So, the Bhagavatam is teaching us once again, and this is a continuous message leading up to the 10th canto, and then again in the 10th canto we hear it more, that we must avoid aparad, means offenses, especially to devotees. There are different types of aparads, which are mentioned in the Shastra. There's Seva aparad, Vaishnava aparad, Nama aparad, and Jiva aparad, or Jana aparad. So to offend the devotees, to offend the holy name, to offend the deity in seva, and to offend any living entity, that is considered aparad. Four categories are there. So here we can see it is like the Vaishnava aparad. That's what the Bhagavatam is warning us about again and again. Be very careful how you deal with the other devotees. So in order to avoid offenses, it is necessary that we become Majjhimadhikari. Now, there are three adhika. Adhika means qualification. There are three types of adhika, or devotees, so have different types of adhikari. One is called Kanishta. Kanishta means? He's low level. In other words, he has a sense that he is superior to others. He cannot discriminate properly. Who is more advanced, who is less advanced, who is equal. It's hard for him to discriminate because his consciousness is materialistic. Then there is Majjhima. Majjhima means the middle level of devotee. So we're meant to act like this. The Uttama means the very topmost level. Even he, when he goes into worldly dealings, he acts like a Majjhima. Just like Prabhupada. Now, he was Uttama in consciousness, but in terms of the way he dealt in this world, he acts like a Majjhima. And Prabhupada explains the Uttama will come down to the Majjhima platform to preach. So Majjhima means discrimination. It is necessary for a devotee to discriminate. You have to understand who is more advanced, who is equal, and who is on the same level, and who is less advanced. If you don't understand these things, you will commit offenses. So actually, when there's any friction in any relationship, if we look in any relationship in this world, if there's friction, it means one person or both people in the relationship don't understand how to treat the other one properly, and therefore there is friction. So, if we don't understand who is more advanced than us, there will be friction in the relationship. Because we don't treat with enough respect the person who is more senior. Then there is the person who is equal. So, if you don't understand who is equal, you don't treat them properly. Rupa Goswami says that you have to reveal your mind in confidence, inquire confidentially, offer prasad, receive prasad, give gifts, receive gifts. That's how you deal with the people who are equal to you. But if you don't understand who is equal, you don't treat them properly. And those who are junior or less advanced, if you don't give them mercy or compassion or help them to advance in Krishna consciousness, then you're also neglecting them. So Majjhimadhikari is one who understands how to deal properly with different devotees. In other words, he discriminates. He can tell who is more advanced. Now, he can say, okay, these devotees are less advanced than me, or this devotee is more advanced than me, or these devotees are equal to me. And he acts differently according to the circumstances. So as long as you don't understand this properly, as long as you're not properly on the Majjhima platform, then you may commit offenses. Because if you're properly on the Majjhima platform, you won't commit offenses. Because you'll understand how to behave and act. So, the Bhagavatam is again and again and again, it is telling us that we must learn how to deal with the other devotees. So be careful of Vaishnava Parad. So she plucked the sage in the eye. So an offense was committed. And then the reactions come. Whenever there's an offense, there's a reaction. According to how advanced the devotee is, that's how much reaction we get. If the devotee is not so advanced, the reaction may not be so great. But if it's a very advanced devotee, then you will get a severe reaction. So one has to be very careful how one deals with the other devotee, any devotee. So, she has committed an offense. And then the reaction is coming. Now we're also learning from this section about Varnashram Dharma. How the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas will work. The Brahmana is considered the superior personality. Just like if you go back to the third canto, we heard about Swayambhuva Manu, he took his daughter. His daughter's name was?
Devahuti.
So he took Devahuti to the ashram of? Kardama Muni. And then she married Kardama Muni. So in the Varnashram system, the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas, because they are the leaders, they understand how to relate to each other. So they will, the Kshatriya will always act respectfully to the Brahmana. And quite often he will give his daughter in charity. So that is the Varnashram system. It means that the different Varnas and the different ashrams, they know how to interrelate properly. And it is said that someone in the higher caste, they cannot marry like a male or a man in the higher caste, he cannot marry. Actually, it's the other way.
The male can marry.
Yeah, the man can marry, but the female cannot marry the other way, right, like that. So there's a strict system within the Varnashram system. Now we see here we're learning something about the Grihastha Dharma. And we'll hear about this in the next verse. The next verse is very important in this section. How one has to act within the Grihastha Ashram in order to make things peaceful. Now this is a little difficult because we've already heard children in this day and age do not like to listen to their parents. And it's interesting because on the weekend we had a retreat at the farm, a cooking retreat. Samohini did a cooking retreat. And one lady came, she must have been 50, maybe 60 years old, I don't know exactly how old she was. But she was telling us actually, when she was young, she started to become a nurse. And then every weekend, because on the week she came to Melbourne, she family was in Geelong, but she came to Melbourne, she studied nursing. And then on the weekend, she wanted to just go with her friends and go places and do things. But her father said, no, he said, every weekend you have to come home and you have to help look after the house, because your mother cannot do everything. You have other brothers and sisters. So every weekend, the whole time she came to Melbourne for her university studies, she had to go back to on the weekend and just help in the house. And then she was telling us that her children, they would never do that. Mm-hmm. Even though she was doing that, that was maybe 40 years ago or something, she was doing that. But she said now, 20 years later or 40 years later, she said that would never happen. No. The parent, you know, if the father said that to the child, they'd say, well, find something, get a cleaner to do it. Yeah. So they won't do like that now. So we see that the system is changing. So it is interesting because we have a Vedic model here. The Bhagavad Gita is speaking about the Vedic model, which is a very high standard. But children are not like that anymore. And we'll also see that the husbands and wives are not like that anymore. So exactly what's here in the Bhagavad Gita, it's very difficult to superimpose that on the modern day and age. Because we're about to read the next verse, and Prabhupada gives some very definite instructions about how a wife should act towards a husband, but it may not be entirely possible in this day and age. Because if you try to impose that on people in this day and age, it may be very difficult, actually. So, any points?
Here you go. How would the girl know that Chevan Muni is sitting in the earthworm hole? This is very mysterious.
She didn't know it was him. She just saw two things.
Just ignoring.
Yeah, she was just a kid, like a young girl or a teenager or something. Mm-hmm. And she just saw like two, like glowing something. So then she got the thorns, she went like that. She didn't realize it was the sage.
Very hard.
Yeah, so what was he doing down a hole?
Exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, if he was down the hole, it means he probably would have had to have been like taken the form of a worm or something. I don't know what he. So maybe he knew what was happening, because these sages are often tree kalagya. So maybe he knew she was coming. Maybe he knew that he would become like that. Maybe she was sick in the iron, and I don't know. Maybe. I was thinking about today. What was he doing down the hole? What was he doing
there?
Yeah, and if it's an earthworm hole, it's probably like only, you know,
very small.
Yeah, small hole, I think. So, you know, what was he doing down the hole? Why was he taking him? I don't know.
Even the type of punishment he gave
was
so funny. You know, making them
constipated
and making them
using
the
dog.
That's right.
Yeah, no one can pass water or pass stool. And then the king, and he understood there's something wrong. We've committed an offence here in the ashram because everyone's completely disturbed. So, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't explain, but maybe he saw something was coming and he understood, so then maybe he acted like this. I'm not sure why. This part of the Bhagavad Gita is very... if you look at the different chapters so far, you know... Sudyumna is walking into the garden and then suddenly he turns into a woman. You know, it's like, is it like very extraordinary pastimes? And then he suddenly becomes a man, he's half man, half woman. 1 month he's a man, 1 month he's a woman. So these are very extraordinary pastimes which are there. When I was in Vrindavan, in Govardhan, for the retreat last year at the end of Kartik, then Adi Purush Prabhu, he taught the ninth canto, I think last year, and I'm teaching it this year, so then he was giving class about the ninth canto, and he said the ninth canto is full of extraordinary events and activities. He said there's controversies and there's all sorts of, so many mishaps like that, because it's purifying us, it's showing us how we should behave properly. So many different things are taking place to get us prepared for the 10th canto by showing us what is proper behavior. Do not act like that, do not act like this. So many things, and so many, you'll see this year, as you go through this canto, you'll see so many things come up in your consciousness, in your heart. Krishna will reveal so many things to you. It's happening to me right now as we speak. Think in my personal life, Krishna's revealing so many things like this. You know, it's like a couple of weeks ago, the planet Mercury, you know, there's all the different planets. So Mercury represents communication. So Mercury went backwards, that we call retrograde. So when the planets go backwards, it kind of has like a strange effect. So Mercury means communication. So it was going backwards a couple of weeks ago, so it means communication was very difficult. So I've gone through a period in the last 2 weeks or a month or so. It doesn't matter practically what I say to people, they take it the wrong way. And all these things have been happening. You know, it's about 4 or 5 times in the last, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, or even 2 weeks. You know, I say something to someone, they just completely take it the wrong way. It's like, oh my God. There's this whole thing going on. So Krishna's like stirring everything up. And he's showing me so many things about myself. So it's like, you know, he's putting the mirror very close. So we look at ourselves and he's making us examine ourselves very carefully. So you see, before we get to the 10th canto, the 9th canto is like a testing ground. We go through all these controversies. And you'll see in your own life this year, as we study, you'll see you'll go through so many different things, and Krishna will be revealing so many different things to you, challenges to purify the consciousness, to prepare us for the 10th canto.
It's not your fault, Guruji.
What's that?
It's the end of the Dhani Maya. You know, we are just sitting on a machine.
The end of Dhani Maya.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's your point?
So, not to worry, whatever Lord Krishna does it good.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just Krishna doing it. I think it's the jiva making mistakes.
Well, ultimate sanction comes from him.
So blame everything on Krishna. Whatever I said to anyone, that was Krishna.
Just be happy.
Yeah, I'm happy. I said, why are you upset with me? Krishna made me say it. Now, what is the problem? Just be happy. I kick on your face, just be happy. No, we have to be very careful. It's making me understand you have to be very careful what you say to people. I'm actually realizing the best thing is just not to speak. Or speak less, or something.
That's not in your hand either.
What's that?
That's not in your hand either.
So it sounds like nothing is in our hand.
No.
I think your philosophy is everything happens, but Krishna's in control of everything. Just do whatever you want, Krishna did the whole thing. So.
No.
Okay. Did anyone else have any points?
I heard once Ramai Swami was telling me that there are some places in Queensland where men are not allowed to go, only women can. Have you heard something like that? Only women are allowed in certain places.
Maybe the Aboriginal places or something.
Hmm.
Any other points?
This very instance shows that every second, every second in this material world, whatever small it may be, the karma, we can't expect how much reaction will produce. So we should be very conscious of the things that's happening around us. And we should remember Krishna.
Padam Padam Vipada.
Yeah. Anything else?
Also, there were, in the last retreat, Adi Pushpa was mentioning the 9th canto. It tests our faith because all these pastimes Because when we come to 10th canto, we should have full faith in Bhagavatam. So 9th canto, one point was to test our faith in Shastra. If we can surpass this through 9th canto, then we can easily go to 10th canto. The second thing, it will remove the lusty desires that we have got. Because when we get to 10th canto, we should be free from lust and envy. So those two things should be, 9th canto removes those two things. As we go from chapters, we'll see a lot of pastimes which have got sexual desires and this kind of relationships are there. So this is to remove our lusty desires before we reach 10th canto.
Good, thank you. Thank you for coming to the retreat. Because I remember when we did the 7th canto, 3rd canto was only 2 years ago. I remember we said at that time that the Sringadeva will remove obstacles. So I saw in my own life many things were removed at that time. So you'll see as we go through this year, see many things will be purified in the consciousness. Anything else?
You know, regarding the relationships, you were talking about how Madhyamadhikari has to learn to discriminate and then he has to develop relationships based on that. I was reading a quote by Srila, by Vinay Guru Maharaj, that many devotees have left the movement since it started, and not because they found a better philosophy, because there's no better philosophy than Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and not because they have found another God who is supreme, because you know, we know Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Not because they found a better guru, because our system, our sampradaya is offering all those things. So he was explaining that many of them left because they did not find the proper love and reciprocation inside the movement. They did not find the proper care and trust being given to them, and that is why they left. And then he was quoting Srila Prabhupada. He said Srila Prabhupada was an Uttama Adhikari, but he used to come down to the platform of Madhyamadhikari and he used to deal with each devotee differently. And especially with the children, Prabhupada was so loving. So Maharaj was saying that even now if I talk to the children who were very young during Prabhupada's times, you know, they say that even though we've gone through so many difficulties in our life, but we always remember the love that Prabhupada gave to us. Like, you know, he used to smile, he used to give cookies, sometimes play with them and all that. So he said that Prabhupada was so expert in healing different devotees and giving them the love and care which kept even in the moment. So it's a great responsibility on us also to shower that love and care and try to see that devotees don't leave because of lack of love and care from the moment.
Yeah, it happens. Many devotees I know of, you know, Prabhupada said when someone leaves, it's 50-50. He said that. It's 50%. It's not like all our fault. It's not all their fault either. Because quite often when people leave, devotees say, oh, they were insincere or something. But it's not that. I know many devotees who've left, and the reason they're leaving is because they feel exactly what you're saying. It's lack of love and affection, which is a great shame. It means that we have to improve a lot. But also from their side, it means there's defects as well. So. Okay, anything else? Okay, now this verse in purport is very important. Chavana Muni was very irritable. He's talking about the husband here.
Yeah, no, I was
really too. Chavana Muni was very irritable, but since Sakanya had gotten him as her husband, she dealt with him very carefully, according to his mood. Knowing his mind, she performed service to him without being bewildered. So, Jamuna Lila, you like to read them?
This is an indication of the relationship between husband and wife. A great personality like Chavana Muni has the temperament of always wanting to be in a superior position. Such a person cannot submit to anyone. Therefore, Chavana Muni had an irritable temperament. His wife, Sukanya, could understand his attitude. And under the circumstances, she treated him accordingly. If any wife wants to be happy with her husband, she must try to understand her husband's temperament and please him. This is a victory for a woman. Even in the dealings of Lord Krishna with his different queens, it has been seen that although the queens were the daughters of great kings, they place themselves before Lord Krishna as his maid servants. However great a woman may be, she must place herself before her husband in this way. That is to say, she must be ready to carry out her husband's orders and please him in all circumstances. Then her life will be successful. When the wife becomes as irritable as the husband, their life at home is sure to be disturbed or ultimately completely broken. In the modern day, the wife is never submissive, and therefore home life is broken even by slight incidents. Either the wife or the husband may take advantage of the divorce laws. According to the Vedic law, however, there is no such thing as divorce laws, and the woman must be trained to be submissive to the will of her husband. Westerners contend that this is a slave mentality for the wife, but factually it is not. It is the tactic by which a woman can conquer the heart of her husband, however irritable or cruel he may be. In this case, we clearly see that although Chyavana Muni was not young, but indeed old enough to be Sukanya's grandfather and was also very irritable, Sukanya, the beautiful young daughter of a king, submitted herself to her old husband and tried to please him in all respects. Thus, she was a faithful and chaste wife.
Any comments?
Very powerful.
Very powerful. What is powerful about it?
Lots of lessons to be imbibed from this purpose, especially for wives.
Like?
I was listening to a Grahastha seminar which one of my senior professors, Krishna Chandra, you know, Rishikesh Mahatma, head of Mahatma industry, he was giving and he was talking about husband-wife relationship. And he was saying about the same point, how the wife has to be submissive and all that. And like Prabhupada says that this is a tactic by which the wife wins over the husband. So he said that yes, the husband should be made to feel that he is the head of the family. The wife should not take that privilege or that position away. Otherwise the husband feels there is no balance in the grihastha life. And he was saying that then that, you know, the husband is the head, then the wife is the neck. So then, you know, wherever the neck turns, the head will turn. So that is the way the wife controls also the husband, the love and submission.
Any other points?
The Ashwini Kumar physicians were also very happy to see Sukanya, such a chaste lady, dead red.
Anything else? So Prabhupada says some very... I mean, it's coming from a very conventional or traditional standpoint, the traditional Vedic standpoint. But how much we could apply that in this age would have to be seen. Because Prabhupada is saying here, I mean, if you read this to a modern woman, you know, not even speaking of the devotee women, but you know, you go down the street here and knock on the doors and say, we're from the Hare Krishna temple across the road, we'd just like to read this to you, right? And then you read something like, when the wife becomes as irritable as the husband, their life at home is sure to be disturbed or ultimately completely broken. In the modern day, the wife is never submissive, and therefore home life is broken even by the slightest incidents. Or even if we go before that, however great a woman may be, she must place herself before her husband in this way. That is to say, she must be ready to carry out her husband's orders and please him in all circumstances. So if you say that to the women in this street, they will all slam the door. None of them will be interested. Seriously, people will not be interested. So there has to be a balance in implementing Prabhupada's and the Vedic teachings in this modern day and age. If the husband expects the wife to be completely like what is being spoken in this purport, you may have problems. Because the women are not like this previously. Sorry, the women are not like they were previously. Just like if you read through the Bhagavatam, we see that the women would do the sati ceremony. In other words, when the husband would go into the funeral fire, the woman would also enter onto the fire. But I doubt that even the most dedicated wives in this day and age would do that. Right? My wife is very dedicated to me, but I don't think she would do that. I don't think she would enter onto a fire. I don't think she would. Whereas previously, the women would do that. So it's very hard to implement on the modern woman exactly what is being spoken of in this section of the Bhagavatam. and the way Prabhupada is speaking. Because Prabhupada is speaking about a traditional system. However, there has to be a balance. Because the male ego is very big. So therefore, he needs to be... the wife has to be very expert, because she actually controls the mood within the home very much. She has to be very expert in how she deals with the husband in order to keep his male ego satisfied. In other words, he has to feel like he is the leader of the family. But simultaneously, the woman cannot lose her independence completely in this day and age. She won't be satisfied. You know, Prabhupada says in the Purport, he said practically the woman has to become a maidservant. Well, that no woman would do that these days. You know, even the devotee women aren't like that. They talk back to their husbands all the time. Isn't it a fact? Does anyone have this experience? The wife sometimes talks back. Maybe some husbands, some rare husbands have that experience. But generally speaking, it is not like that. So therefore, it's very difficult to completely impose the Vedic role model in this day and age. So we have to be expert in how we adjust these things. And when we preach, and when we counsel other devotees, if you're counseling other devotees, if you're going to pull out purports like this, and if you're going to quote purports like this and instruct devotees exactly like this, I don't know if it's going to fully work. You know, I don't think I would tell a devotee, you just have to be submissive to your husband. We tell them to follow the husband, cooperate with the husband, to be completely submissive like a maidservant, that may be too difficult for most. Especially, it's just the nature of the modern age. The children are not submissive, the wives are not submissive, the husbands are not qualified. So how is it going to all work if we just put it on? Even it was interesting, today I read on the, someone put up on Facebook, a quote by Carl Jung. Carl Jung, you've heard of Freud? Sigmund Freud? Have you heard? Freud?
The philosopher.
He's a psychologist. He's said to be the father of modern psychology. Freud. And Freud, did they say Freud?
Yeah,
Freud. So most people have heard. So Carl Jung was his contemporary. He's also, he's like the second biggest. He's also one of the fathers of modern psychology. They write all the books. If you go to university and study psychology, they quote Freud and Jung. These are the main gurus. So actually, it was interesting, I read today, and Jung would have been living 70, 80 years ago, like that. So it was quite a long time ago when things were more traditional. But he actually made a point, I read it today, he said that if a wife becomes completely absorbed in her husband in this day and age, and just becomes his, he said that would not cause a peaceful household. She has to follow her own path. But simultaneously, she has to be affectionate to the husband. So it seems like in the modern world, it's more like that. So we have to be very careful how we counsel devotees. Because we can read these things that Prabhupada says and what the Bhagavad Gita is saying. But if you want to bring this whole Bhagavad Gita philosophy directly onto the modern day and age, we may have problems. And we see, as an example, I was listening the other day, my Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was speaking about the Gurukul in Dallas. Now, the original system of Gurukul is that the children will leave the parents and they will live away and they will go to the ashram or the school of the spiritual master. They will not live with the parents. And we see that is the traditional system, and that's the way that it was practiced in ISKCON in the early days. And even now there are some places in ISKCON where it still takes place. But my spiritual master was saying that his observation was that was not the best formula for this day and age. For the children to be away from the parents. He was saying the best formula is the children to stay with the parents and just go to a school, like the modern kind of system. So everything that's here in the Bhagavad Gita, which is there previously, it's very difficult to implement everything exactly as it was previously. So we have to be mature in how we do it. Not that we lose the essence, right? We're just mature how we apply it in the modern day. And it's interesting because Prabhupada, he constantly changed things. You know, people think, oh, Prabhupada, and my spiritual master, he would say, this is a problem with ISKCON. Because they say, Prabhupada said. And then Prabhupada said, so now we'll always do it like that, because Prabhupada said. But my spiritual master said, I was with Prabhupada all the time, and Prabhupada adjusted himself all the time. It wasn't like, you know, Prabhupada said it means, you know, he said something in 1974, that was going to be forever. In 1984, Prabhupada may have changed things. He was always doing that. 1994, he may have changed again. 2004, now it's 2014-15. Prabhupada may have changed things quite a lot. Because the world has changed a lot. So we have to apply the basic principle. So what is the basic principle? Husband and wife should get along. That's the basic principle. Chanakya says, wherever the husband and wife do not argue, Lakshmi Devi comes and lives in that house. In other words, everything becomes auspicious. When the husband and wife do not argue. Now, what does it take for the husband and wife not to argue? Right? There has to be respect and there has to be understanding about the individual's nature. Right? Because if the wife is not affectionate and submissive to a degree to the husband, there will be arguments in the house. But on the other hand, if the husband tries to impose complete domination on the wife, there's also not going to be peace in the house. So there has to be a balance. We have to understand. So you see in your own Grihastha Ashram, if everything's peaceful, if you're not arguing, then you know the formula is working properly. Yeah, if everyone is becoming Krishna conscious, it's different. Then the point is, it's different for every husband and wife. Because not, you know, some, even in this room, I can see some of the devotees, right? I know their Grihastha situation is quite different to another devotee who's even sitting next to them. Because the individuals are quite different. So we can't impose, and we can't say, well, the way we do it is the way that you should also do it, because it is quite different. So it has to. We have to be expert when we're counseling devotees. If we counsel devotees and we say, you know, you all have to just follow this particular way, and everyone has to just fit into this particular mold, it won't work. So we have to be very mature in how we apply this philosophy. So, any points?
Yeah, Guru. We have to understand that if a male person is drunkard and he is involved in domestic violence, how can the wife love him? He never comes on time to home and he's drunk and then he wants whatever he wants in the wife. How can she?
Yeah, so what would we advise in that circumstance?
Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, Krishna consciousness, but what would we advise to the wife?
She has to be submissive to some extent.
Yeah, to some extent, but probably what I would advise is the wife would seriously consider leaving the husband. That's how I would advise. You know, if the husband's coming home drunk and beating the wife and doing these, no, I wouldn't say be submissive to your husband. I'd say seriously consider leaving your husband. Right? There has to be some counseling that the husband has to go through to understand how to act properly. Right? And I was hearing on the radio the last couple of days, they're going to have a royal inquest. You've heard of these royal inquests they have in Australia? They had one on child abuse recently, like that. So now they're having one on domestic violence in Australia, because it's such a big problem in Australia. It's a huge problem in Australia, domestic violence. What's going on? And my wife's half-brother, he has just become a policeman. Last couple of months he became a police officer. And 90% of what he does as a policeman is domestic violence problems. You know, people just ring up, oh, you know, my husband is beating me or my wife or this, and that's probably all the cops do these days. So that's how we should advise. It's not acceptable for the wife, for the husband to hit the wife. Right? Doesn't matter what the circumstance is. Right? So that happens, and if we hear, sometimes you might hear even amongst the devotees that that's happening, then it's your responsibility, especially the men, it's your responsibility to do something about it. You don't stand by and let these things just take place. Right? You get involved and you stop it. As I told you in the past, Prabhu Vishnu Prabhu used to be our GBC here, like that. So one time, he found out that one of his disciples was beating his wife. So what he did, he got that disciple to come in the room, and then he got all the God brothers, his other disciples, he came in, and he said, you know what we do in Ireland? He said, I'm from Ireland. He said, you know what we do in Ireland when someone's beating the wife? Right? He said, all of us in the village, we get together, and we beat the husband. Right? So he said, everyone was there. Right? And he said, that's what we do. He said, where I come from, we all get together and we beat the husband. Right? So he said, now, and then basically he said, are you going to stop or not? he said, that's your, they're your choices. Okay. So it means it's our responsibility if those things take place. Any other points?
See, Prabhupada, those days they were living, you know, like a joint family. And then the wife never used to go to work, you know, and she used to be calm. But now, because they want their wife to work, they want to know what is her qualification before they marry her. And so it means they want her to earn as well. So I mean, it's a bit hard.
Oh yeah, it's a difficult situation these days. Yeah, the world's very, very complicated and very difficult these days.
The wife used to be home and she used to be calm, just looking after the children and all that. And
yeah.
She has got more responsibility. And
yeah.
It makes it a bit hard for her to be calm.
It's very unnatural now because no one lives in extended families probably practically anymore.
Yeah.
But the extended family is actually the right situation for a society.
That's right.
The husband and wife are not always on each other's nerves.
Yeah.
Because the family is there.
You can't be.
Yeah,
you can't. You can't have domestic arguments because your mother and father are there. you can't start throwing things across the kitchen. How many plates are you going
to
smash when your mother or father's present? You can't do it, that's why.
And elders always calm the situation down with
experience. Yeah. That's just it. So, yeah, I mean, we've wrecked the whole situation. And as you say, then the women are expected to have jobs now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a difficult situation.
See, the men get agitated because they have to deal with so many people outside the world. Now, the same thing is the wife has to deal with too. So she is agitated too.
Yeah, it is. It's very complicated.
And then the family members, because joint family, they used to be the judges. So nobody could just blame each other.
And everyone was satisfied. But previously, the women were satisfied bringing up kids.
Yeah.
Right? But most women now, they're not satisfied with that. They can't. They go crazy. That's why they go out and get jobs. You know, because they just, it's not in their nature now just to do that. Like that. I mean, some women can, but many women, they just don't have the nature anymore. They need work, they need something else. And a lot of the problem is because previously the women were all together. Now you live by yourself, you don't have association, so you want to go to work or do something else. It's a complicated situation. Any other points?
So this model definitely doesn't fit in today's day.
Even in Gujarat.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Even in Omar.
Yes. But what my point is, Srila Prabhupada is making a point here. What he's trying to say is basically he's showing a technique how to make a marriage life successful, which can be applied for devotees who are practicing Krishna consciousness.
So the woman should be completely submissive.
No. I'm not saying that. It won't.
Prabhupada said that. So the wife should be the maid servant.
No. It's not that there is a technique being shown in order to actually make the household peaceful. That's probably what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, the point is, this is the point I made before, that it's, because I know nearly everyone in this room, right? And I know nearly everyone's grihastha situation, it's very different. Very different. I know the wives, I can see who's sitting here. I can see some of the wives are very different to the other wives. So to sit here and to say, okay, this is how everyone should act, it doesn't work.
It doesn't apply.
Yeah, so what Chanakya says is, right, if there's no argument in the house, Lakshmi Devi comes and resides there, right? So if I go home now, right, and I say to Atulya, right, now you have to be a maid servant. Okay, I'll read her this when I get home. I'll say, you have to be like this. She'll look at it, and she'll go, okay. She'll put the book down. And she is. She's very... But, you know, she can't be like this. What's said there? She accepts my lead. She accepts those things.
Right.
But at the same time, but you have to find that balance.
That's
That's what I was trying to say. That's why I started off by saying it cannot be applied in today's day and age, in this modern world. It's not possible. But there's a technique, some subtle messages being given by Srila Prabhupada, which is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, because what's the main thing? What does every husband want to be? He wants to be happy. Right? He wants his wife to be affectionate and loving. And what does every wife want? She wants to be happy. She wants her husband to be affectionate and loving. So every grihastha couple has to work that out. Right? It's the wife's responsibility to make the husband happy. It's the husband's responsibility to make the wife happy. Yeah. So everyone has to work out how to do that. And in each relationship, that will mean different things.
Actually, also, Srila Prabhupada mentions about divorce laws, which is what is mentioned up here. Prabhupada could foresee what was coming. I mean, now two out of three marriages break, which is literally what the statistics are. So, I mean, and if you were to tell this to a modern person, like you said, on the street, obviously they would not accept it. But they don't know anything about reverse psychology to the world, which is what may help.
Reverse psychology? Meaning?
I mean, like the fact is, statistics, I mean, two out of three marriages are breaking. I mean, if you try something opposite, will it work? They wouldn't even try to do it.
Yeah, everyone has to learn in their own relationship what works to keep the whole thing harmonious. I've got a good friend, who is also a good friend of yours. I was speaking to him a couple of weeks ago. And him and his wife, they get along very well and they're very happy and they're going, but they always have differences of opinion all the time. Like if he says black, she says white, right? If he says white, she says black. It's just their thing, right? So I was at his house near his pool and his tennis court. I think you know who I'm talking about, right? So he wanted to put stones in the pots and he wanted black stones. So he went into his wife and he said, I think we should have white stones. He said, no, we should have black stones.
That's exactly what I'm
because that's what he wanted. He wanted black stones, right? So he used reverse psychology, right? She said, no, we're going to have black stones. He goes, no, I want white stones. He said, no, I'm black. So yeah, okay, go, we'll have black. But then he got what he wanted and she wanted. So you have to learn in the house how to keep everyone happy.
Absolutely.
So we all do that. It's diplomacy like that. But in relationships, you have to do that. Sometimes the husband has to bend to the wife has to bend to the husband. Sometimes you have to, you know, just to keep everything peaceful. Because we all want to be peaceful. If there's arguments all the time, it means the dynamic is not correct. So we have to work out somehow to make the... Because when it's peaceful, it's so much easier to chant. You know? So much easier to chant. You know, Atulia and I, like, sometimes we've had disagreements. And next morning, I get up in the morning, I can't chant my rounds. I'm chanting, but the whole time I'm just thinking about, you know, the argument we had the night before. You know, that's what happens. So if everything's peaceful, it's so much easier to chant. You get up in the morning, your mind's peaceful, you just chant the holy name and like that. So grihasthas have to learn in their own relationship what works and to keep it all happy and satisfied. And even sometimes the woman's the more dominant person. In some relationships, that's just how it works. She's the leader, actually. I know several devotee couples where the woman is far more dominant than the man. Yeah, so in that relationship it works, so that they're happy. Okay, anything else?
One thing.
Yes, sir.
When a match, which rarely happens these days here at least, but it is very important when marriage happens, you match the astrology, because when you match astrology, astrology is based on the nature of a person. So when the astrology is matched, then there are more chances of marriages not breaking than if it is randomly done, as it happens this year.
Very good. Interesting, because a devotee who I met last year, who became very good friends, he actually rang me today and asked, because he's thinking of getting remarried, and he asked me for some astrologers. He said, you know, who is it who can read the charts? So. But earlier in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says there's one thing that's even more important than astrology. Anyone remember what Prabhupada said? Ultimately, yeah, ultimately. But he said this, when choosing between the husband and wife, he said, what is the most important factor? He says astrology, but he says something's more important.
She's from a good family?
No, not specifically.
The understanding and love between them, not the faith.
No.
Having the same spiritual mind?
No. Prabhupada says the blessings of the elders. You see, that's the most important factor in the marriage. You know, if the husband and wife, if the two people get together and all the seniors are saying this is auspicious, then that is Krishna's arrangement. You know, when I asked the Tuya to marry me last year, and then I began to tell all the devotees, and all the devotees were saying this is auspicious. Right? So then I knew that that was Krishna's indication. Because senior devotees were saying, yes, this is good, this is good. You know, because if the senior devotees are saying, oh no, there's something wrong here, then you take this as an indication like that. So astrology is very important, but even more important is the senior people when they speak. Right, so. Any other points?
I remember once a king takes his daughter and one of the princes he was going to marry to a sage and to ask whether the marriage was okay. And the sage gave blessings as a thread and there was something in the thread and gave it to the king and put on the hands of husband and wife. And then they went and then when the marriage happens, the king was curious what's in that thread. And when it opened, it read, whether you marry or don't marry, who cares? I don't care. So sometimes the seniors might just give you blessings because they don't care really. Because they're sannyasis. If you ask them. Even Prabhupada mentioned to one of his disciples, you can choose whomever you want to marry. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's true. On one level it doesn't matter, and on another level it does. Like that, so yeah, both are true. Yeah, because sometimes the sannyasis, they'll just say anything like that because they don't really care, as you say. But other times they, because they know the people, like because Burujan Prabhu is my main shiksha, you know, because my guru has left the planet, my diksha guru, so he's my main shiksha. So you know, I speak to him on things like that, important things. But when he speaks, he's not just saying anything; he's actually involved. So. Yeah, no, I think it's true. Some will act like that. They're like, yeah, whatever you do, that's up to you. But other times, then they will genuinely get involved, especially if they know you and if there's a relationship. Dave Marita Swami especially gets very involved in things with his disciples. He's very concerned about, you know, who will match them. Dave Marita Swami. Dave Marita Swami is here at the moment, so he'll be giving lectures the next few days. Yeah. When's he lecturing?
Thursday
morning. Where is he? Tomorrow night he's speaking at Urban Yoga or something.
Urban Yoga.
Yeah. He's doing a retreat at the farm this weekend. Okay, so we have to get to verse 15. Yeah, we're on 11 now, we have to get to 15. So we'll just read through them. Thereafter, some time having passed, the Ashwini Kumara brothers, the heavenly physicians, happened to come to Chavana Muni's ashram. After offering them respectful obeisances, Chavana Muni requested them to give him youthful life, for they were able to do so. So very powerful. They turn him into a young man. Extremely powerful. Chavana Muni said, although you are ineligible to drink soma rasa and sacrifices, I promise to give you a full pot of it. Kindly arrange beauty and youth for me, because they are attractive to young women. The great physicians, the Ashwini Kumaras, very gladly accepted Chavana Muni's proposal. Thus they told the Brahmana, just dive into the lake of successful life. One who bathes in this lake has his desires fulfilled. After saying this, the Ashwini Kumaras caught hold of Chavana Muni, who was an old, diseased invalid with loose skin, white hair and veins visible all over his body, and all three of them entered the lake. Thereafter, three men with very beautiful bodily features emerged from the lake. They were nicely dressed and decorated with earrings and garlands of lotuses. All of them were the same standard of beauty.
I'm glad you're
Yeah. there's some material exchange taking place. And the other thing is that material life is based on sex life. So it's all about how you look and how you present and all like that. That's the meaning of material enjoyment. So everyone wants to stay beautiful. One of the biggest industries on this planet is the cosmetics industry. Massive, massive industry. Just so that, you know, people will buy this and put this on their face and make them look, just so they can be what they think is attractive to others. Like that. So everything is based on superficiality.
And plastic surgery too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, massive, massive industry. So when we get married in Krishna consciousness devotees, we don't choose the wife because of the way she looks, or the husband because of the way they look, but we choose them because of their heart or their qualities. That is why we choose. So we only choose a spouse who has good quality. A wife who has good qualities, a husband who has good devotional qualities. That is the way we choose. If you choose based on the superficialities, then it just leads to problems in this material world. Anything else?
But you can't avoid the beauty.
Can't avoid?
The seeing the beauty at the end, because even the beauty and she served her husband so well, and she was so initiated after that. So he by mystic power, he made her beautiful.
You can't avoid the beauty. Mm. Especially if Krishna makes you beautiful. Then you cannot avoid
it. You can't really ignore. That's what I'm saying.
Unless you're born ugly. So the most important thing when we choose a husband or wife is the quality of the devotee. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.